Hello and welcome to the Blockade Runner podcast number 226. My name is John, and joining me for the first time in a while is Ryan. Hello there, Ryan.
Hello. Yeah, it's been a minute. You're probably not watching the video, but we are recording with video, and you can see behind me that all my shelves have been staged. That is because we are in the process of selling our condo and buying a house, and everything is staged for showings, and that is kind of the prefab nightmare I have been living for the past couple weeks. Kind of taken up my whole life, so hopefully we're in the home stretch of everything and we can get this place sold really quickly and get moved into the new place.
Yeah, congratulations. That's always fun times. Moving into a new house and that kind of thing, that's really cool.
It's not fun at all. It's not fun. It's not cool.
Okay. Well, I was going to say that my office here is also staged, but just like to be an enormous nerd, you know what I mean? I have everything staged like just, you know, just how I like it, just for me to look at and be like, look at all my
things
I have in here. So speaking of dorky stuff, Ryan, I was really excited yesterday when these guys came in the mail. These are the Obi-Wan Kenobi Wandering Jedi and Reva vintage collection figures. And my goodness, the Reva, the sculpt on Reva's face is unbelievable for such a tiny little figure. So those are really cool. Do you have those ordered or on the way or anything like that?
I do not. I only ordered the retro collection ones. But that's a decent turnaround for, getting the figures out. Ideally they would have been out when the show was happening or even, God forbid, before. we're only like a month out from the end of the Obi-Wan show. So like the fact that they got the figures out compared to how long some of like the Mandalorian figures and stuff have taken in recent months, like that's solid. It's decent.
Yeah, I agree. I think they actually do deserve a little credit there. It's certainly an improvement. Things are moving in the right direction as far as getting stuff out. So these toys are great. So that was an exciting mail day. Okay. Let's get into today's episode, Ryan. We are going to talk about Obi-Wan Part 6. We have two great messages, actually, from our friend Dave Hackerson in Japan. Some really insightful stuff. So we're going to talk about those things. Maybe a couple of your thoughts as well, since you were not with us last episode to talk about that Obi-Wan Kenobi finale. So we'll talk a bit of Obi-Wan stuff, and then we're going to discuss some other news that's happened in your absence, in our absence, actually, because we took last week off. But yesterday, there was a Light and Magic trailer release, so we'll touch on that. And then we've got a little news from Taika Waititi and the Andor show as well. So we're going to run through all of that today. But let's start with some thoughts from Dave on Obi-Wan Kenobi Part 6. The first kind of message from Dave is actually a thread that he posted on Twitter. So I'm sure we both, I know I looked at that at the time he posted it, but it's super, super interesting. Dave's specialty is, kind of looking at the Japanese language versions of Star Wars projects, I believe he works in translation. Is that correct? Does he work in localization or translation?
Yeah.
If not, he definitely has.
He does a lot of it.
Yeah. So that's something that Dave is really talented at. And so we always appreciate his commentary on that stuff. And he's got some great commentary here on the confrontation between Obi-Wan Kenobi and Darth Vader in Part 6 of Obi-Wan Kenobi. Ryan, real quick before we get into it, you're going to run through this because you know Japanese a little bit. I don't know it at all. So you're going to run through this first message from Dave. But do you want to like quickly weigh in on that confrontation, the rematch of the century, Ryan? Did you have any thoughts on that since you haven't talked about it since it aired?
Not really in particular. I thought, like, you know, it was well done. I thought the whole show was great. I really enjoyed watching it. I haven't gone back to it. I've only watched, aside from the first two episodes, which I watched twice, I've only watched every episode one time. I think that it was like a really, really well done story, really well executed. There were some surprises and then a lot of stuff that, you know, we kind of expected from it. But all in all, like, super well crafted. I don't think I had the kind of emotional reaction that, you know, a lot of fans did to any of it. But, you know, I think for this kind of project that we weren't quite sure what the, you know, initially what the necessity of it was, I think it kind of justified its existence through the whole thing. And I think, you know, there's already the talk of, like, what's next? Where do we go from here? And for me, I think the interesting places to go would be, mostly Reva's story, to be honest, because I think something we rarely get in Star Wars is a redeemed character who doesn't die. And so it's like, what does redemption look like in the Star Wars universe? You know, she ends by, you know, kind of doing the right thing. And it's like, well, she did the right thing. She renounced, you know, the dark side in a sense, you know, possibly. It probably still has some hold. But it's like, how do people who have been embracing the dark side, like, kind of come back from that? And, you know, that's been, you know, in stories here and there, but we've never seen it, like, really fully explored, I think, with the kind of at the level that something like this show was created at. So I'm more excited to see what happens with her and, you know, and her journey. I think, you know, they could do more Obi-Wan. Obviously, Ewan McGregor is great. I think having another show where he, you know, clashes with Darth Vader again, you know, as great as it's been having Hayden back, I don't think I really want that. And I don't know if I, like, need him and Qui-Gon, like, doing their thing. I think the way that ended was kind of perfect, where, like, Qui-Gon's like, yeah, we're just getting started. And, you know, that's kind of good enough for me. But, you know, of course, I'm not, you know, I've learned my lesson. I'm not going to say no to more Ewan McGregor Star Wars. So if they do, if they're like, hey, we got this great story, I think, and if it's the same creative team, like, I think I have trust in them now. They've earned that to be like, okay, well, you're probably going to do something cool. I didn't know I wanted this, but it's, you know, it's probably going to be worthwhile. But what I would personally really like to see explored is more of Reva's story.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I agree with most of that. I think, I don't know. I'll tell you one thing. I'll make this quick because we got to get into Dave's message. But one thing that I've been irritated by just in, like, the general larger discourse, I listen to a lot of video game podcasts. And for some reason, like, every video game podcast I listen to wants to, like, weigh in on the Obi-Wan show. And most of them are like, oh, it sucks. And usually the thing, and some of my friends too, like, the thing that I hear a lot is like, oh, that's such a huge galaxy. And I know you've said similar things too, Ryan. It's a valid point, but it's such a huge galaxy. There's so many, like, there's, you know, thousands of years they could explore. They keep going to the same 40-year period, whatever.
True.
Fair enough. Sure, sure. But I think, like, to me, what I feel like look at a time period, or not even look at a time period, look at a character and what story is left to tell with that character, or what story would be interesting to tell with that character, right? So like the Obi-Wan show, like you, when it was first talked about, I was like, I don't really know. Like, what do you do with that? Does it need to be told? Whatever. I think this show proved that, yes, there was a story there to tell, mm-hmm. and it was really good. You know, that being said, I don't know how much story is left to tell with Obi-Wan. So I'm kind of, if they do another season, I trust them that it'll be great, but I don't personally feel like there needs to be another season, or, you know, whatever. I feel like we've done enough with that character. Now, if they announce a new show with either new characters or a character that exists, but there's like a vital story to tell, I don't really care what time period it's from. I don't care if it's a character I know or a character I don't know necessarily. I want stories that have some vitality and some reason for existing, in terms of not like, what does it contribute to the larger canon or whatever, but like, can you tell a good story with this character? Is there a story worth telling with this character? That kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, I feel like we did that with Obi-Wan. I don't know that we need to do it anymore. But, and this is like a long-winded way to get here, we were just talking about the Thor movie, which we're not going to, well, maybe we will talk about it a little bit later. I haven't seen it, but we were talking about the MCU and stuff like that. And like, one thing you mentioned, Ryan, yesterday, I believe, is like the idea that everything is always setting up the next thing or whatever. And to me, like, that's almost like what I want, what I don't want, like, more so than like, oh, stop doing things in the same 40-year period. I don't even really care about that much personally. That's just where I'm at with it. If it feels like it's like there's actually a reason for this story to be happening, or it's an interesting or unique story, I don't care which characters it is, which time period it's in, as much. But what I don't want is like, what I really don't want with Star Wars on TV, and we'll see if it happens or not, and this is actually what everybody else seems to want and what people are clamoring for, but like, I don't want every project to just be leading into the next project to set up the next show that's going to connect to that other show, mm-hmm. like necessarily, where it just feels like all we're trying to do is build like an IP conglomerate universe that's constantly, you know, like developing the next thing. I don't want that. And so like, I think Reva is a super interesting character, and maybe they have a plan or an idea for a show to do with her. And I would even go so far as to say, I hope they do, because I love the actor. I love the character. But so like, maybe she's the exception to the rule, but in general, I don't really like the idea of like, oh, we watched the Obi-Wan show and there was a character in that show, and now in the next thing is they'll announce a show with that character in her own show, and like do it. And they're kind of doing that with Mandalorian stuff and everything. And I'm mm-hmm. just like, maybe, you know, I don't know. So we'll see. I think we have to explore Reva's character more in some form. And if it's a TV show, I'm happy with that. If it's some other show and then her character pops up in it, I'm happy with that. I think at the very least, we got to get like novels, comics, that kind of stuff to support that character. I'm not against a show with her,
yeah.
But I'm kind of against like Star Wars TV as just always leading into the next thing. Because then I feel like the stories you tell are less about in the moment telling the best story you can tell, and more about, I don't, like, let's say Darth Maul, for instance. Darth Maul's a non-controversial example of this, I think. Like, oh, they wasted Darth Maul when they killed him at the end of The Phantom Menace. God, that was such a waste. Like, Darth Maul was so cool. They could have done so much more with him. That irritates me, because it's like, no, when they were making The Phantom Menace, they said, what's the best story we can tell with Darth, or what's like, what story are we telling right now? Not, ooh, we should save this guy so we can do 400 other projects with him down the road. You know, like, I don't want that. I want you to tell the best story you're telling in the moment, not be worried about like how you could spin it out in 1,000 different ways if you keep the character around or whatever. Mm-hmm. Cool tangent I just went on there. All right. I kept it under like 5 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, well, now I'm going to extend it out and belabor the point. But, you know, I think, yeah, it's a balance, like, and that's kind of the problem with like all these, you know, cinematic universes, shared universes, whatever you want to call it, especially when they do just start to feel like these kind of predictable content factories. And like, you know, like, your mileage may vary on this, like, some, you know, they're like, I was a very, very hardcore like MCU fan, like, you know, 5 to 10 years ago. And I was like up for everything. I was watching, you know, I'd buy the the Blu-rays when they came out and watched all like the bonus features and stuff. Like I wanted to know what was next. I was making predictions, and that eventually just kind of has gotten like exhausting to me. And I don't know if I've just been, there's just been too much, but you know, I watched the new Thor yesterday, which was, I guess we can talk about this when we get to the Taika part, which was fine. It was fine, but it didn't like really inspire or excite me as much as like, you know, even Thor Ragnarok. And, you know, and it did kind of feel like, you know, we got to the end of the movie and I was like, that was fine. And then it's like, okay, well now here comes the post-credits sequence and here we're like setting up like the next thing. And then like they set up the next thing and I was like, man, do I even care about this? Like kind of feeling, I don't know. So I think that can be exhausting. And I think, you know, it's also not exciting to like be, you know, always going back to Tatooine and always, you know, focusing on, you know, original trilogy characters and stuff like that in Star Wars. But I think, you know, a good story is a good story. I think if like, you know, if I'd seen Thor yesterday and it was just like just perfect film, I think I would have been like more excited about it, and more excited for like what comes next. But you know, if the quality's not there, like it kind of doesn't matter, because you can do like a super fresh new thing too, and which, you know, like Marvel kind of tried to do with like Eternals, and that like didn't end up being that great of a film. And so I don't know, it's tough. And I think the approach, which seems to be generally what Lucasfilm is aiming for, minus the Mandoverse, which does feel very MCU-ish, is like get good creators to tell good stories they're passionate about, and you know, get the actors who are passionate about it to come in. And I think that is the best approach. I think, you know, I think we do need to get out of the original trilogy time frame. But you know, if there's a really good story to tell, you know, with those characters, then I mean, I don't think creators should like restrict themselves and be like, well, nope, that, you know, prequel to original trilogy, that's off limits. We can't do anything there because we already did so much. But if someone has like a really good story, but I think like, you know, balancing that, I would rather like, I mean, ideally it would be fresh stories in fresh time periods with some new characters, some familiar elements, but just told really well. And you know, because I think that's the most exciting time, when like we don't exactly know like where things are going to go. And I think like the beginning of like the sequel trilogy era, I think was one of the most fun times ever to be a Star Wars fan, because like we really didn't know where things were going to go. And I think that's like, you know, just as like a viewer, that's where the stakes feel highest and where it's, you know, most exciting to like have discussions and make predictions and all that. So I would like things to be in that kind of place. But, you know, if a good story is a good story, and, you know, that should be told, and it shouldn't always just be setting up the next thing, and like the next spinoff and stuff, for sure.
I agree. Last thing, so fast. I keep hearing people complain about Tatooine, specifically in the case of Obi-Wan Kenobi, the Obi-Wan Kenobi show. And I'm like, what the hell? Like, it started on Tatooine and it ended on Tatooine, but they went to multiple other planets. Like, most of the show did not take place on Tatooine, and it's a show about Obi-Wan Kenobi. Like, what else are they going to do? You know? So whenever I hear somebody say like, oh my God, Obi-Wan Kenobi, like back to Tatooine, I'm like, hello, Like, they had to be on Tatooine at least for part of it, but they went a bunch of other places. Like, it's not like we were just stuck on Tatooine for the whole show, which I would have been fine with, by the way, if that's the story they told about Obi-Wan Kenobi. But like, I get the Tatooine like argument, like in the larger framework of Star Wars storytelling and stuff. But like, this video game podcast I was listening to yesterday, like somebody was like, oh, it's back at, like, why do we have to be on Tatooine? Because it's a show about Obi-Wan Kenobi, and that's where he is in that time period. And it went a bunch of other places. So I just, I can't, like, ugh. That's not one I'm relating to when it comes to this show, specifically Obi-Wan Kenobi complaining about the show.
I mean, it's not a fair complaint for the show, but I think it's like the dunk should be on all the other things that like went to Tatooine for, you know.
Yeah, but it's just a symptom or an example. It's a simpler, an example, I guess, of how I feel like there are these like complaints about Star Wars that just like float around, you know, and I'm not saying they're not valid or whatever, but they're like out there in the ether. And then like, I feel like sometimes when people are talking about Star Wars and complaining about Star Wars or whatever, they just reach for the stuff that like is always complained about, you know, like, oh, Tatooine again. But if you take like 5 seconds and think about it, it's not like you said, like, is it a valid complaint for other shows? Sure. But in this case, like really, we're going to complain that the show's on Tatooine. I just feel like it's like, I don't know. Let's talk about Dave's messages, because Dave's got some great commentary here on Obi-Wan Kenobi Part 6, Ryan. So,
yeah, and just in advance, forgive me, my Japanese is not what it used to be. And hey, kids, if you have learned a second language, something very true about that is if you don't use it, you lose it. So just want to throw that out there. And, you know, I was looking this over and I was like, man, I should be really practicing my Japanese more, but we'll see how this goes. But hopefully it doesn't, some of my, inevitable, missteps here do not take away from Dave's message. So anyways, he starts by saying, you didn't kill Anakin Skywalker. I did. The same way I will destroy you. These lines in the Kenobi finale destroyed me. And this scene hit all the much harder with the Japanese dub/subtitles. First, let's rewind to what Anakin/Vader says before this. In English, he tells Obi-Wan, Anakin's gone. I'm what remains. The Japanese dub is Anakin wa shinda, watashi wa sono nukegara da. What struck me was the use of nukegara. The word nukegara in Japanese consists of nuke and kara. The first part implies shedding or cast off, and the second part, shell or skin. In essence, Vader is telling Obi-Wan that he cast off skin that was once Anakin. But what I really loved was the Japanese subtitles, which substitute nukegara with zengai. The word zengai breaks down to zan for remains and gai for skeleton. Combined, they literally mean corpse or carcass. This word in subtitles hit really hard. Taking these subtitles, Anakin/Vader is essentially telling Obi-Wan that Vader is a corpse, the dead remains of Anakin. He is asserting that Anakin is buried. The English fails to deliver this impact, but the use of nukegara and zengai in Japanese do. In short, the Japanese Anakin Vader utters here better conveys to Obi-Wan that Anakin is truly gone, although it could be argued that Anakin/Vader is trying to convince himself of that, with Vader burying Anakin deeper within that shell. Next, Anakin/Vader tells Obi-Wan that he does not need to feel bad about Anakin's death. He says, "You didn't kill Anakin Skywalker, I did, the same way I will destroy you." The Japanese dub and subtitles translate the first part exactly the same, but not the last part. The Japanese dub for the first part goes, Anakin Skywalker, oh, Kurashita no wa omae de wa nai watashi da. The subtitles are practically the same, but the final part is where it gets really interesting. When Anakin Vader says, "The same way I will destroy you," in Japanese, the dub goes, "Onaji yo ni omae mo homut yaro." And the subtitles go, "Onaji yo ni omae mo homurisate yaru." The word homuru in Japanese means to bury. So what Anakin slash Vader is literally saying is, "The same way I'll bury you, the same way I'll leave you dead and buried." I was blown away by the use of homuru here, because Anakin slash Vader uses this very word in the Japanese subtitles for his confrontation with Ahsoka in the final episode of season 2 of Rebels. There he tells Ahsoka, "Anakin Skywalker wa yowa kata yue ni homuta." Anakin Skywalker was weak, therefore I buried him, or so I entombed him. I don't know if this was intentional, but I love how the Japanese line of thought synced up perfectly in these two confrontations. In both instances, Vader is facing two people that Anakin loved dearly, and vice versa. Each time, Vader tries to bury the light that is Anakin, with the Japanese reiterating that Anakin is dead and buried within the shell that is Vader. Likewise, in each series, we literally see the characters being buried. In Kenobi, Vader attempts to bury Obi-Wan under a pile of rocks and literally leaves him dead and buried. This is Vader's attempt to further destroy slash bury who he was as Anakin. In Rebels, the Sith Temple is collapsing on Vader and Ahsoka, threatening to bury them both. In both instances, Obi-Wan and Ahsoka emerge from the rubble, and both make peace with the fact, from their point of view, that Anakin is dead and buried. These are major moments in their character development, as well as progression as Force users. And Dave continues, last thought here. Another interesting thing about the kanji that begins the verb homuru is that the first kanji in the word soshiki, which means funeral. The use of words bearing this character in Japanese reinforces that Anakin's funeral is now complete in the eyes of Obi-Wan and then later Ahsoka. It enables them to make peace with what the Force has brought their way and move forward.
Yeah, I was blown away by this thread when I saw it initially. First off, I was blown away by the line, "Anakin's gone, I am what remains," in the show. When I watched it, I thought that line was like so good. But then, you know, when Dave kind of expanded on that by discussing sort of the Japanese version of that dialogue, I thought there was so much in there that was like really, really interesting, really compelling. You know, the concept of shedding or casting off a shell or skin. I love that. Like the idea that, that Anakin is the former persona or the former skin or, you know, kind of version of him. And now he's this new person that shed Anakin Skywalker. I'm now Darth Vader. But that, like, coupled with the language about being entombed, you know, the idea that like that Darth Vader helmet and armor and, you know, everything is like, you know, Anakin is entombed and buried within that version, or, you know, that new persona, that new version of Anakin, Darth Vader, whatever you want to call it, like all that stuff, you know, kind of comes together in such a compelling and interesting way. And so, you know, obviously Dave described it super well there, and I don't really need to restate the argument he was making, but that stuff all came together so well for me. And then to take that, you know, the English version of the dialogue, the Japanese version of the dialogue, Anakin, Vader, to take these things that are coupled together and then couple those ideas with the actual like visual storytelling of the show, or just like what's happening in the show, Vader burying Obi-Wan under all those stones. Man, that's incredible. It's incredible. And I will say the first time I watched the episode, I was like, this is like slightly goofy, you know, the fact that he's like, oh, I'm going to defeat Obi-Wan Kenobi. I know how I'll do it. I'll make a big hole in the ground and then I'll bury him with stones, you know?
Yeah.
Like the first time I watched it, I was like, this is a little goofy, but like, obviously I've watched it a couple more times since then. And the symbolism is evident. It's obvious, you know? But I think powerful nonetheless and really good, and really interesting, but you know, obviously like this just contributes to that or develops that further, you know, that the actual language, of what Anakin is saying to Obi-Wan Kenobi, like pairs so well with that choice for him to try to, you know, bury Obi-Wan the same way he's tried to bury Anakin. Love it.
Yeah. And what I, you know, just, you know, this is, you know, it's fun to like kind of just open up to, these kind of thoughts and discussions and, analysis of something like this. And I think, I can't quite make all the connections in my head right now. But it would be interesting to think of like how, you know, taking all this into account, how that kind of recontextualizes the scenes in The Last Jedi, with Rey, talking about like the Force and lifting rocks and how that was like kind of a joke, but kind of not in that movie. I don't know. It's all just, it's kind of just one of those, reoccurring themes, in Star Wars and like discussion of like the Force and like who characters are, and all that. And it's, you know, it's become like a pretty fascinating thing. And I'm glad, you know, I'm glad they like use that visual metaphor, because that's really what it is. Like, it's not about him, like, you know, being, you know, under rubble. You know, it is a visual metaphor, as like Dave was saying, but it's a very specific one that is like reoccurring in Star Wars. So, yeah, I think, you know, obviously reading Dave's comments here, there was connections I did not previously make, but they like totally fit. And I think like the other thing kind of about all this is, again, like we've talked about this, you know, multiple times on the show, specifically with Dave and in regards to, Dave's comments, is just how incredibly thoughtful and intentional the Japanese dub and subtitles are, like the interpretations that are like kind of coming through, in those, I think are just, it's really, really good and interesting stuff. And it's not a literal translation of what the, you know, the American show is. And I think this is like a great, conversation. You know, I've followed, you know, anime and manga and Japanese video games for, you know, since I was a kid. And, you know, by the time I was in high school, like I started to get like way more interested in the localization process, and how that worked with like anime, manga, games, like how, like, you know, and I started like learning about it and even learning like discovering like fan translations of stuff. Like, I used to be an anime tape trader and like order sketchy anime tapes from fan translators, like VHS tapes, back in high school, and, you know, and really kind of getting a feel like, okay, so I watched this and then like, you know, a couple years later, this was released on DVD in an official capacity and like, whoa, it's like totally different. And like the original Japanese is the same, but the interpretation, the translation is different. And so I started to like really think critically about that. And, you know, a huge discussion, in those communities of among localizers and everything is, you know, like the literal translation versus like, you know, a localization, which is, you know, contextualizing it for the language of like the audience and the culture of the new audience, you know, after the process. And so, yeah, like it's so interesting. And, you know, this is a conversation and thoughts that, you know, kind of swim in my brain after watching like Star Wars Visions too, is like, it's so interesting to see, because I'm so used to importing Japanese exports, and to see the way an American export is, you know, localized into Japanese is just, it's just perpetually fascinating to me. And I think to me, you know, from my perspective, and it's not even really my place to say, but, you know, from my perspective, like, it seems like the Japanese localization is just been like incredible, in this era of Star Wars, just across the board. Like, there's just really thoughtful localizations happening, and by people who like really, really deeply understand the source material. And that's just, that's fantastic.
Yeah. And we're lucky to have Dave to, kind of point that out to us, make us aware of it, and, help enrich our experience watching the show by pointing that stuff out. Because like, otherwise, I don't know about you, Ryan, but I would definitely be sitting over here, completely unaware of all of that, you know, and I wouldn't I'd have no idea that the Japanese localizations are as strong as they are. So that's really great. Dave also, responded to, part of our conversation on the last episode of the Blockade Runner podcast. We were lucky enough to have Brandon and, Brandon of Talking Bay 94 and, Maggie, his wife, on the show to talk about the finale of Obi-Wan Kenobi. So, you were in sunny San Diego at that point, I think, Ryan. So just soaking up those rays and loving the beach, is what you were up to. So you weren't able to join us. I know you're a beach guy.
I'm still sunburnt, by the way. I'm still, cursing the sun daily. Put that guy in jail.
All right. So, but yeah, Dave, sent a response into part of our conversation there. So, Brandon and Maggie both, talked about the fact that, that there were the one kind of complaint they had or criticism they had of the finale was, the sort of lack of discussion of Padme. Obviously Obi-Wan talks to Leia about both Anakin and Padme, in their final scene together in the finale, but, you know, Brandon and Maggie and many other people, thought there was an opportunity to discuss Padme, in the scene with Obi-Wan and Vader, which, you know, I think makes a lot of sense. But Dave has, some thoughts on that, which I think are great. So we'll share those as well. Dave writes, "The one bit I'd like to comment on is your discussion concerning the lack of Padme, namely, why didn't Obi-Wan tell Anakin Vader that Padme still believed there was good in him before she died? This really got me thinking. And as I sweat buckets in this sweltering Tokyo heat," you might want to put the son in jail as well, "a couple of things come to mind. First of all, knowing Obi-Wan was there with Padme when she died would further enrage Anakin Vader, reinforcing the notion that Kenobi was stealing his wife away from him. This could possibly cause Anakin to further dig his heels into Vader. What's more, knowledge that Obi-Wan was with Padme when she died would lead Vader to ask, what happened to the child? It would be very difficult for Obi-Wan to lie and say the children died, for as is often the case when Force users face off, thoughts can betray the individual." There's more, but just this first part, I mean, those are both pretty strong arguments in terms of, you know, maybe why it wouldn't make sense to include Padme in the discussion here. The one that I guess the most compelling, which honestly, as he writes this, I could see it going either way. It could be really interesting if Obi-Wan does bring up Padme, because there's that moment in Revenge of the Sith when, you know, Anakin's like, "You're with him, you know, like you're, you know, whatever," like that whole scene, or that whole moment where he's like jealous. And like, I mean, there's a moment earlier in Revenge of the Sith too, right, where he says to Padme, like, "Obi-Wan was here, wasn't he?" And there's not like a real, like, obvious you know, kind of frustration about that or jealousy, but I don't know. It's a moment, you know, and then later on, you know, you're with him, whatever. So anyway, just that thought, like, I mean, if they had wanted to go down that road, that could have been really interesting. Like, you know, further developing that jealousy or whatever you want to call it. That could have been interesting, but also as Dave points out, like maybe strategically on the part of Obi-Wan Kenobi, it wouldn't have been a smart play because you're just going to piss him off. Right. So I think that's a solid point from Dave for sure. And then also the whole thing about the children, like, yeah, totally. Like Obi-Wan's whole mission is to like keep those kids away from Anakin or from Darth Vader. So do you really want to bring up the fact, I mean, do you want to open up that can of worms at all? You know, do you want to talk about Padme and what happened to her at all? You know, I guess if you're writing the show, you can certainly just write that conversation in a way where Anakin doesn't ask about the children and then, you know, you avoid that problem. But I don't know. Interesting ideas from Dave. Any thoughts on that, Ryan?
No, I mean, I think it makes sense in the story they're telling why that wouldn't be, was she wouldn't be brought up as much. But at the same time, I also feel like Padme is such a crucial part of the story, and it's not like it's a triangle. It's not a love triangle, and like those, I don't know. Like it's weird interpreting those scenes that you mentioned in Revenge of the Sith. Like, was there like a romantic jealousy, or is that just Anakin Skywalker just on part of his unraveling? Like his mental unraveling and his, you know, fixation on this stuff, that he's, you know, those, and I think like it's fine that those scenes are a bit more ambiguous and maybe don't need to be explored in further detail, necessarily. And they can just be kind of left at that and people can interpret them how they want to interpret them. I think that's fine. But I do, you know, I think when you kind of think of like the core story, the core characters of the prequels, I mean, I think it is, you know, it's Anakin, Obi-Wan, and Padme. And so I think, you know, there are plenty of reasons why Padme wouldn't have been a part of this show. And, but I do think it would have been cool if we got like, you know, a flashback with Natalie Portman in that. That's might have been something that was in the cards. It might have been something that Natalie Portman was just like, nah, about, which is totally fine. And, or they may just not have been able to like make it work in a way that didn't feel like fan service-y. Which also like, it, you know, if it comes down to that sort of decision, like, yeah, don't do it. Like if it's feeling that way and you like can't work it in like really well to the story, like, please just don't do it. Don't do it just because you can, for sure. So yeah, no, I think, I think like some of the most, I think her presence loomed in the series. And I would say like the, like, as I kind of mentioned earlier, I didn't get as emotionally invested in this show as, you know, other people did. But I think the parts where I felt the strongest emotions were the parts where Padme was implied or explicitly talked about in the show. And yeah, and so I think like for me, like I felt her presence in all of it, but it would have been nice to, of course, to have like seen her in some capacity or to have done a little more in the story around her. But I don't know. I think it was still good the way that it was. And I would rather it, you know, be like this and more on the minimalist side than like having her like a big cameo that's like, that didn't really work, and then like souring the whole thing.
Yeah, we talked about both of those things on the last episode. I mean, like, primarily the conversation was about like, hey, she should have been brought up in this confrontation specifically. But then I know we also did mention the idea that like, well, they could have probably gotten Natalie Portman to do a cameo or a flashback or whatever, and that would have been cool too. I would say, like, I think one of the last comments you made there is, you know, about like, what did you say? Like, err on the side of like, you know, not overdoing it or whatever. I forget how you phrased it. You phrased it well. but in any case, like, I was kind of thinking like that I was very emotional in that scene with Obi-Wan and Leia at the end of the finale. And, you know, like when he, you know, very kind of slowly and, you know, deliberately and emotionally tells her like, you are the best of both your father and your mother, and starts to describe the qualities of Padme. Like, the fact that they never talked, or they didn't really bring her up explicitly or talk about her too much all the way up until then, I feel like it does kind of protect the impact of that scene. Like, it is really impactful because it's like it built to that moment, you know. And if three or four other times he was having conversations with Leia, he was like, oh, and your mother Padme, blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't know that it would have like still had that impact there. So I think like saving it for that moment, did contribute to that. That being said, I think it still would have been super emotional had they had that conversation during the Anakin, you know, Obi-Wan or the Vader Obi-Wan confrontation. And then, you know, he talked to Leia about it. It's not like it still would have been, but I guess there's something to be said for, you know, kind of avoiding that topic until that final moment and then giving it as much impact. So sometimes more times mentioning her name in the show is not necessarily always going to be the most impactful way to go about it. Right. So, I don't know, things to think about. It's not, I'm sure it would have been good either way. But Dave, very logical arguments here about why maybe Obi-Wan would hesitate to bring up Padme in this scene specifically. And actually, he continues that. He writes, there's also the scenario in which Anakin flat out dismisses admission of Padme's faith and the good that lies within him as nothing but a ruse from Obi-Wan. After all, he straight up tells Obi-Wan during confrontation on Mustafar that he sees through the lies of the Jedi. In the eyes of Anakin, the Jedi Order is synonymous with lies and deceit. And admittedly, his own experience, including what befell Ahsoka, would give him credible evidence to make a case. As such, any such supplication about Padme's belief in good, the good in Anakin, would likely have fallen on deaf ears. So maybe he wouldn't have bought it anyways. Mm-hmm. And then finally, lastly, the second Vader series run has an arc in which Vader engages with Sabe and other members of Padme's Naboo guard. Upon visiting Padme's grave, he comes across the broken medical droid that assisted in the birth of the twins. It is there he sees video fragments of her death and hears Padme admit that she believes there is good in him. To me, it seems the Obi-Wan writers or story group at Lucasfilm would want to preserve the impact of that scene, which would naturally lead them to avoid inserting that within the confrontation between Kenobi and Vader in the series. I think I read that. Did I read the second Vader?
I don't think you did. Because that was... Okay. I think this is actually the... Is it the...
Charles Soule?
That might have been the Greg Pak one. That might actually be the third Vader series, but I think it is. Maybe. I don't remember. The second and third series kind of run together in some ways for me. But really all against all odds, like pretty much every Vader comic series is like really good. I fell off the most recent one and stopped reading last year, but just when I was trying to cut back on some of my monthly comics and the economic impact of that. But I mean, generally, like, I would, all three Vader series are really good in that. The stuff with Sabe is like really initially shocking. And then actually I was like kind of uncertain. I was like, oh, is this just like a shock value? Cause you're like, yeah. But then it actually is like a really good story. So I do recommend that.
It sounds really good. If I could be a slightly bad person for just a second here, I respect the optimism Dave displays here about the canon, and like the desire to protect like all these other stories and stuff like that. But like, I still am cynical to the point where I think if they were putting together like a multi-million dollar Obi-Wan TV show for Disney Plus and the writers wanted to kind of just ignore the fact that that scene happened in the comic, I think they would have carte blanche to do that personally. I mean, maybe they would take steps to try to make sure it's not like totally stepping on it or whatever, but like, I still don't believe that Disney, Lucasfilm, whoever would be like, you can't do that. There was a comic. I don't think they would.
Yeah.
I think they would finesse it. I think you'd get Pablo or somebody like that to finesse it so it doesn't completely like trample on the comic thing. But it's hard for me to believe that they're telling people, you know, you couldn't do it if you wanted to.
Yeah, I mean, we've been having this conversation for years now, you know, ever since they kind of announced the quote-unquote
canon. I usually get proved wrong. I usually get proved wrong, and yet I still cling to the cynicism.
And I would say, you know, there, like you've said, there has been some finessing of things, for sure. But they are kind of holding to that where like they're not really making live action stuff or even animated stuff that like wholly contradicts any of the books or comics. I'm sure there's examples out there, but as far as like the stuff that I've read, what I see more than anything is them pulling stuff from the books and comics and like, and bringing that stuff into the live action storytelling, not wholly, but you know, they are like really kind of it's a long ways from where we were in the EU, where things felt like constantly contradicting what we kind of saw on screen and. You know, the consistent retcons and everything, which, you know, is fine. That was like a whole different era. And like, that doesn't like mean those stories are bad or anything. But like, there was like, you know, I think Lucas had a very different approach when he was like running things where he was like, yeah, do whatever, write your books. But like, I don't care about your books. Like, I'm going to do, you know, my thing.
Yeah. And I don't mean to imply that they don't care about this stuff or respect it, or that they're not trying really hard to make it all fit together. Cause I think all those things are true. And I think if anything, they'd probably stop a comic book from doing a story that they thought might be a problem for something else, or, you know, I don't know, but like, I think that they certainly care about trying to make it all feel like one cohesive thing. And they're not, you know, it's the opposite of Lucas's approach, like, you know, previously. So yeah, totally 100% all that. But even like the way, you know, Dave is suggesting here, like, oh, well, you know, they'd want to preserve the impact of the scene in the comic. It's comics already out. It's gone. The vast majority, I would argue, I would put this out there. I think, the vast majority of people who will ever read that comic have already read it.
I have already, you know, read what I mean? It. I think that's fair.
And the number of people that are going to read that comic is so small in comparison to the number of people that are going to watch Obi-Wan Kenobi on Disney Plus. It's hard for me to believe they'd be like, oh, well, but that would like, now when somebody goes back and reads that comic for the first time, it wouldn't hit them as hard. I don't think that probably factors in. It's a logical point. It's a good point. It's interesting. In the real world, though, it's hard for me to believe that they would be too worried about that, especially because like what Dave's describing here, it doesn't even contradict it. It just kind of like would be a second example of him learning that information mm-hmm. instead of, you know, the first example. So.
Yeah. But, you know, so far they are continuing to walk that line and, you know, so much respect to the story group that there aren't these like, and I wouldn't even call that if they had done this, I wouldn't call it like a huge egregious misstep or anything. Yeah. But they didn't, and they have like, you know, they are still preserving the, I guess, sanctity of, these, you know, the literature side of things, which, you know, I think, yeah, yeah, there's not really much else to say about it, but, you know, I think it's just, it's really impressive the way they've, kind of walked that line, throughout the years, and they've like pretty much delivered on that, like, I wouldn't say the everything is canon, promise, because like it's pretty obvious we have some like some weird stuff out there that's like definitely not canon, you know, some of like the kid lit and some of like the, you know, like Star Wars kids cartoons and even, you know, stuff like Visions and whatever that like are like pretty obvious that like not every single thing is canon, but for, you know, the publishing side of things, like it has been pretty well aligned with what we've seen in live action and animation. So that's pretty impressive that they've been able to like maintain that.
Certainly true. Okay. Just in order in an effort to protect the sanctity of the runtime of this episode, we got to keep moving, but very much appreciate the comments from Dave, and we will link to the Twitter thread from Dave, which you should definitely go check out, as well as Dave's Twitter account. So if you're not following him yet, you should be doing that if you're interested in you know, this kind of perspective and additional information about the Japanese language version of Star Wars stuff, or just because Dave's a good dude and has great takes on Star Wars in general. Okay. A couple more things. Light and Magic, the trailer released. I watched the trailer. Ryan, did you watch the trailer?
I did not, but I'm going
to... You didn't watch the trailer.
I don't feel like I need to watch a trailer for that. Like, I'm going to watch the show, but like, I don't need to be going like frame by frame of like this trailer and whatever. Like, I know it'll be something I watch eventually. It'll be interesting.
Fake fan.
Visual effects create the magic that makes people want to go to the movies. Movies are special effects.
We start with an empty frame. Anything is possible.
As audiences see through the illusion, the bar just raises.
How do we do this now? How do we make this look great?
I leave it to the geniuses at ILM.
It's right there in the name, Industrial Light and Magic.
The history of ILM goes way back.
When I was writing Star Wars, there were no special effects houses in the world. So how are we going to do the effects?
I realized that I was going to have to start a company.
We didn't really know what we were doing. We were not movie people. George wanted a bunch of guys who didn't know what was impossible.
We were departing from convention. We had to build equipment from scratch. This was a long shot.
We make it look like a professional movie instead of a bunch of kids having fun.
We realized nothing is impossible.
There was just something here about the people.
Suddenly, everybody wants to come to ILM.
We were trying to do things that have never been done before.
Oh, I don't know. I'm making this up as I go.
They're pushing technology forward.
There's so many innovations that ILM made.
Digital editing, computer graphics.
We developed Pixar to be a cartoon company.
One thing led to another. It turned into Photoshop. Now you could manipulate images.
Visual effects would never be the same again.
I remember that incredible feeling when all you've got is an idea. It was so exciting.
I want to work with people that inspire me. That is the spirit of ILM.
It goes back to that original group that were unpretentious, brilliant people.
That was our family. We enjoyed each other's company.
Yes, we waterslided. Yes, we were immature, but nobody worked harder. We were the Rebel Alliance. Yahoo!
Yes, you'll watch it eventually. It comes out on July 27th. I think it's a 6-part. I think that's what it is, right? And I'm unclear. Like, it says streaming July 27th. I don't know, like, with a documentary series like this, will it be a weekly thing? I hope it is a weekly thing. But I don't know if it'll be weekly or if it'll just be like they just put it all up on July 27th, you know? Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be great. I just saw Pablo Hidalgo tweet yesterday or someday recently that it's super, super good. Yeah, I can't wait for it. Specifically, I'm excited for, because the trailer shows, it shows George Lucas talking about ILM. So there's a new George Lucas interview in there, I'm pretty sure. So like, that's interesting. Cool. And there's a lot, like there's footage from Back to the Future, I think, and like Who Framed Roger Rabbit and Jurassic Park and like Forrest Gump and all that stuff like in there. And if I'm remembering correctly, the early part of the trailer seemed to be like focusing on the legacy of ILM and like all the different projects they've been involved in. But then after that, it was a lot about like, how did ILM get started, and footage of people going down like water slides they built in the parking lot at ILM, and, you know, like a lot of stuff like that. So I'm really looking forward, in particular, to the stuff about the foundation of ILM, archival footage from, you know, way back, in the early part there. And it's not a documentary series. It doesn't seem about Star Wars and the special effects of Star Wars. It's a documentary series about Industrial Light and Magic. Obviously, they're part and parcel tied in with Star Wars, especially in their founding. But it'll be about, you know, special effects in movies throughout the decades, Indiana Jones, many other things. So, yeah, it's going to be great. Directed by Lawrence Kasdan, coming out soon. I'm really excited for it.
Yeah. And I'm extremely okay with it not being fully about Star Wars. Like,
yeah.
I've watched those bonus features on every DVD, on every Blu-ray. Like, I know the ILM relationship with Star Wars at this point. But, you know, I don't know anything about how they did Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Like, I don't know that much about like the foundation and the growth of the company, you know, beyond the original trilogy and how that kind of came to be. Like, I mean, I know that it happened because I've seen dozens, if not hundreds, of films that, you know, they've worked on. But yeah, like that is the part that like interests me. Like, it's almost like the Star Wars part of it is like extremely secondary to me for this for this particular instance. So yeah, I'm excited for this. I'll definitely be watching it. I do hope it's weekly though, because if they drop like a 6-part thing that's like an hour long each part, like that's gonna be not something I'm gonna like get through for probably 6 weeks anyways. So like, I guess it doesn't matter if people, you know, the people who love to binge stuff like that, whatever, I don't care. It's not like anything can really be spoiled for something like this, but I don't care whichever approach they take to releasing it.
I think you and I are on the same page. Like, we'll binge Stranger Things, but like a show like this, like, let's do it, you know, episode by episode, and that will be the best way to do that. So anyways, I can't wait to see this. Lawrence Kasdan directed
Stranger Things. That's 24/7 binging Stranger Things. That's me. Love that show.
All right. So, yeah. So, next thing is Taika Waititi talking about his Star Wars project. There's probably been other stuff, you know,
controversial interview.
He's doing press now, right? Taika's doing press because his new movie, Thor: Love and Thunder, is that what it's called? Just came out. So he's doing press. And, yeah, there's been some talk about Star Wars. I just pulled from this recent Rolling Stone interview. So I have three questions from the interviewer, three responses from Taika. I love the first one. Here's the question. For the Star Wars movie you're working on, you said it wouldn't be about Chewbacca's grandmother, meaning that you weren't interested in simply diving into the backstory of the characters we know. And Taika says, I saw on Twitter, someone's like, I'd actually really love to see a movie about Chewbacca's grandmother. And I was like, I shouldn't have said that because this is awesome. I just feel like for me, I'm never going to please the fans. You know, I don't want to mess with something that's so treasured. Also, you feel like you've got to do a lot of research and I don't have any time. I mean, there's thousands of books that have been written, these volumes of book about Star Wars with all these characters. I just don't have time to get through them. And I say, as a nerd surrounded by Star Wars crap, having like hundreds of Star Wars books in this room with me right now, I feel you, Taika. I feel that. Like, man, there's so much. Like, I don't want to have to, like, you know, be obsessed with, like, you know, having all this knowledge about all these millions of obscure characters. I think it's super fun that people like Pablo Hidalgo do have all that knowledge. And I also think it's super fun when they throw in the little Easter eggs, like the Corran Horn thing in the Obi-Wan Kenobi show. I barely know who that is, but I think it's fun that they did that. But anyways, I hear where Taika is coming from is all I'm saying. So he continues. He continues. So I can't say, like, you know, confidently that I'd be able to do something that's very close to what everyone knows. I'm not promising that I'm not going to do anything like that. I'm just saying it'd be easier for me to not do that. Would you like to see a Jar Jar Binks movie?
The way the interviewer just rolls with this is so good.
Well, let's talk about this comment first, though, because I think, like, we've seen other comments from Taika. Yeah, I mean, for instance, the Chewbacca's grandmother comment, right? Like, we've seen other comments from him that made us think, like, oh, his movie is going to be totally different. It's not going to have anything to do with anything. But here he says, you know, I can't confidently say I'd be able to do something very close to what everyone knows. But he also says, I'm not promising I'm not going to do anything like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, good for Taika. He's just sort of saying, like, hey, man, it doesn't really seem like the way I want to go with it, but, you know, I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And I think that's good. All that being said, and I'm sure we'll talk more about this, you know, as we continue this discussion, but I'm not getting the impression that whatever he's doing is super solidified at this point. You know what I mean?
No. Yeah.
Now, it could be that he's, you know, he's very, very funny. He's very, very wry. Obviously, if you've seen any of his work, you know that he's somebody who can be very silly. And he often does kind of use a sort of persona, you know, like in his comments and the way he presents himself. So could he be kind of like just doing a bit here where he's sort of like, eh, you know, maybe I will, maybe I won't, whatever. Like, I'm not sure. I'm not entirely convinced that he's taking this interview 100% seriously and, you know, very carefully and very, very carefully, you know, commenting on what he's doing with Star Wars. He might just be goofing around here to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with that possibility?
Yeah, because, I mean, there's kind of two approaches you can have to this, because these are the questions that always get asked. And these are the questions that no one can ever answer until things have been made official and, like, the official announcements and everything comes out. So, like, you can have, you know, you can be asking someone these questions and they can be like, no comment, or sorry, I can't talk about that. Like, which is every single one of these interviews that we've been reading since, like, the prequel era. Or you can have someone just be like, I'm just going to say, like, a bunch of, like, contradictory, like, weird stuff that, like, doesn't really answer the questions, but, like, also just making the interview actually entertaining to read, then, you know, just reading a thousand, sorry, can't really talk about that. Look forward to hearing more when we're ready. Kind of things. And you're right. Like, this is in character for him. Like, he had, I don't know if this shows, but, I think it was, particular to Alamo Theaters, which is where we saw Thor Love and Thunder, yesterday. There's a Alamo has, like, a very draconian, like, no talking, no phones policy. Like, you will get thrown out of the movies if you're like talking without a refund. And it's wonderful. It makes, you know, Alamo Theaters a great place to see movies. But they always do like a special, like after the trailers and everything before the movie starts, they always do like a special like message, like that's kind of fun. And then there's like the message after that that's like, seriously, don't do this. But like the fun message for this one they had recorded, it was Tessa Thompson, Chris Hemsworth, and Taika Waititi like telling, you know, and their you know, Chris Hemsworth is like talking about, you know, to be worthy of, you know, the hammer of Thor, like you can't talk in text and movies and, you know, just like this kind of silly thing. And then like Taika comes in like into the frame, like talking on his phone, and he's talking about like, you know, parking the Maserati and like all this stuff. Like he's being like, you know, his director character in the thing. And it's really funny, but like, I think that is something to, you kind of have to, I think this interview, the people who were angry about this interview are people who probably aren't very familiar with who Taika Waititi is and his work. Because even if you've seen like his episodes of Mandalorian or his episode of Mandalorian, like you wouldn't really get the full picture of who he is without seeing like his other work and his other interviews and everything. So I think for me, this was just a great Taika Waititi interview. And like, I did not go into this interview expecting like, you know, to get a ton of information about, you know, his film or, you know, really deep, you know, analyzation of Star Wars or him, you know, talking about like, you know, how much he loves the franchise and how much he loves the fans and, you know, that kind of like whole other kind of Star Wars interview. You know, this was just a great Taika Waititi interview is kind of what I got out of it.
Yeah. And, you know, I will say I didn't go into the interview with any expectations, but when I read these comments at first, I was like, oh, whoa, this is like a little concerning because, you know, 2 months ago at Star Wars Celebration, Kathleen Kennedy was saying like, oh yeah, this, you know, Taika's movie is going to be next. We're hoping to have it out by the end of 2023. And like, you know, it's July and he's acting like he doesn't know what the movie is even. and he might not, that there might be more truth to that than we know. I know he said in another recent interview that he was still writing. So, you know, who knows where it's at. But all that being said, if we took the first comment here that he made, like, I'm not promising I'm going to do that. I'm not promising I won't. Who knows where it's going. You know, I think the next response shed some light on that because the interviewer, you know, Taika ends with, would you like to see a Jar Binks movie? Taika says, that's the question Taika asked the interviewer. The interviewer says, honestly, yes, but I saw someone online made an interesting point, and which, by the way, yes, I would love to. But sure, I saw someone online made an interesting point. If you go too far away from everything we've known, why is it even Star Wars? Why not just make a fresh science fiction movie? Taika says, you know what? Whoever said that is probably actually right. Now that I think about it, like this would be the first time he's thought about that. You know, now that I think about it, like, uh-huh. As you were saying that, I was like, yeah, if you take away all the Star Wars stuff, it's not Star Wars. So I retract my thing I said a couple weeks ago, which is in reference to Chewbacca's grandmother. Okay. So clearly he's like, yeah. I can't answer these questions. I'm just going to like goof around here. Right. Like, so I don't think we can glean too much in terms of like, serious data about like what's going on with this Taika Waititi Star Wars movie based on this interview, because he's just being a goof, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That being said, the last question is really interesting, and I think he does take it a little more seriously here in response to the last question. So in either case, the fact is the modern history of Star Wars is littered with abandoned projects. Lucasfilm CEO Kathleen Kennedy doesn't hesitate to jettison movie ideas that don't seem to be working. How do you deal with that knowledge as you start to work on this? He says, might happen to me. And I think of Taika of 10 years ago would be so panicked and nervous at the prospect of that. But if it's not right, it's not right. If it's not ready, it's not ready. With Star Wars, I don't want to rush. It's something I wouldn't want to just leap into and not feel that it's unique, it's my film, and it makes sense, because that would be a disaster. I'm writing at the moment, so I'm going to do my best to come up with an idea that everyone loves. So yeah, that's good. You know, I think, I don't know. It's an interesting question. Like, hey, Kathleen Kennedy doesn't hesitate to jettison movie ideas that don't seem to be working. You know, I read that statement and I'm like, good, good. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. You know, I think we've talked about it many times on the show. Maybe don't announce them until you know they're working. But, you know, right. That being said, I think if it's not working, like, yeah, don't do it. And I think it's a very healthy response on Taika's part that he's like, well, if my idea is not working, then that might happen to me. Like, my idea might get canceled, you know, and like, all right. But I kind of doubt that's going to be the case. I think he's brilliant, and I'm sure, you know, that he's coming up with some great stuff. The response to the question don't really get into like how malleable he's willing to make his idea. Like, is mm-hmm. he willing to kind of like, if it's not quite working as far as Star Wars goes and the larger fabric of Star Wars, is he willing to change it a little bit or shape it a little bit? He doesn't get into it there, but yeah, I don't know. Interesting stuff. I still have a lot of faith that this movie's going to happen. I think that maybe, I don't know. It's hard to say, but with Kathleen Kennedy saying at Celebration that it's next and they're hoping it could be done by next year, I do, like, either she's full of baloney or maybe she's just a little less gun shy or a little less protective of, you know, talking about it a lot right now than Taika is, you know, especially because he's promoting Thor Love and Thunder. He probably doesn't want the whole interview to be about Star Wars anyways. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. I guess we don't know much. We don't know much. I know that I love Taika Waititi reading the interview. Like mm-hmm. maybe that's the biggest takeaway. He's hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think for two kind of totally different reasons, I don't think we can like 100% trust what Kathy Kennedy is saying. And I also don't think we can 100% trust what Taika's saying. And I would not. I mean, I think, I don't know. I don't like going back to, I don't remember what her exact phrasing was for like the movie and the release date and the certainty of it, but you know, I think it's, no matter what she said, if it changes, I think it's like just as easy to be like, yep, plans changed, like, and then that's that. Like I do think she whether it's for like shareholders or just wanting to, you know, comfort fans or whatever, I do think sometimes she gets like ahead of things with the announcing. And I think like Lucasfilm as a company has done that, as I mean, especially when it comes, I mean, specifically when it comes to the film slate. And that's just something, again, like for me, like what we always kind of talk about, whether on the show or like in text conversations, like I will believe stuff and I will be ready to like start, you know, getting hyped and, or, you know, getting cautious or however I'm going to feel about something once they start filming it. But until like they've started filming it, like it's still an idea, a theoretical, and there's been a lot of theoreticals that just didn't come to pass. There's been more that have happened. But I think kind of like a safe way to be, especially if like your entire life is like hinging on the next like Star Wars film, is just wait till they start filming and then you can, you know, start, you know, thinking about it like on a deeper level if you choose to. But until then, it's just, you know, it's just an idea. It's just a possibility. It's a hope. It's a dream. It's ephemeral.
Yeah. I think a couple things there. One, when she was talking about this at Celebration, she talked about Taika's movie and the Rogue Squadron movie in very different terms, if I remember correctly. Like, she talked about the Rogue Squadron movie. It was like, well, Patty's really busy, you know, we're still working on that, but she's really busy. Or basically it was like, yeah, who knows when that's happening. And the official line was, because Patty's really busy. Now, who knows, like, how much, I know that she is very busy, so that's certainly true, but there's been suggestion that there's other problems with that as well. And just the way Kathleen Kennedy talked about it sort of indicated to me that it didn't, that was not super concrete at the moment. You know what I mean? That it was a ways away and that there were things that needed to be worked through. But the way she talked about the Taika thing was like, Taika's next, first off, is what she said. Taika's next. And then she also, you know, said that she was hoping by the end of 2024 or 2023. I think that's almost certainly not going to be when it actually comes out. But just the way she talked about it, like, even for her to be like, I'm hoping, or, you know, that's what we're shooting for or whatever, I doubt they make that. But it just seems on a lot sturdier ground to me than like other movie projects, which they're, you know, was namely Rogue Squadron, which she didn't seem to want to be very definitive about in the way she was talking about it. So I think, you know, even just that right there, like, who knows when it's actually going to come out, who knows what it's going to be, but there seems to be more confidence in it from her for a couple of reasons there. So we'll see. Okay. Last thing, Ryan, let's talk about Andor. This is one of those things where, like, I feel like I did hear some of this actually at Star Wars Celebration. So I'm not sure exactly what all is new here and what's not. I mean, I know Tony Gilroy came out on stage and he did talk about the fact that there was two seasons. He talked about the fact that the first season was like 1 year of Cassian's life, basically 5 years before Rogue One. And that the second season would take us up to Rogue One and go and cover multiple years. But we kind of have like more specific information about that here from Tony Gilroy. This is from Empire Magazine, by the way. And the Empire Magazine, if you want to get it when it eventually comes out, actually it's out now, Thursday, July 7th. It has Avatar, The Way of Water on the cover. So you could, you know, kind of kill two birds with one stone there. You could get some Andor information in this magazine and then also read all about Avatar, The Way of Water. Because James Cameron is back to reinvent cinema. That is the subtitle of the article there. So, anyway, there's an exclusive image from Andor in that magazine.
Way to kill the vibe of the episode. Jeez, that just like, yeah.
Oh, actually, I think this interview is just quoting what he said at Celebration. So, okay.
Yeah,
if that's the case, then we definitely know what he said. But I'll read it anyways. The scale of the show is so huge. Directors work in blocks of three episodes, so we did four blocks in season one of three episodes each. The shooting schedule organically... Oh, no. That's the commentary from the writer. We looked and said, wow, it'd be really interesting if we come back and we use each block to represent a year. We'll move a year closer with each block. From a narrative point of view, it's really exciting to be able to work on something where you do a Friday, Saturday, a Sunday, and then jump a year. So, yeah. I mean, pretty much... I guess what we're getting here, what we're learning is that, season one is that first year. And then after that, it's going to be jumping, you know, through the timeline.
Yeah.
Cool. I've seen some graphics. Somebody put a graphic together. I think maybe it was Star Wars News Network made like a graphic and it like did the outline of like, okay, this is Andor season one. And then this is how like season two is going to break up these different years leading up to Rogue One, whatever. But like, you know, basically, that's what it is. It's 1 year for the first season, 12 episodes, and then we kind of move a little more quickly through the following years.
Good.
It sounds good, right?
Sounds good. Yep. We got a cool some, is it just one picture or did we get multiple pictures?
Just one picture.
Okay. I've only seen this one picture. So cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, and or on a speeder bike with a
with Stellan Skarsgård.
Yeah.
Stellan Skarsgård behind him. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Looks cool. It like I saw this picture and I was like, yeah, this looks like, you know, an Empire still photograph that you would get for like a Star Wars film. Like it looks really good. It just has that vibe. Very excited for this show.
Yeah, it looks great. I'm interested. I'm trying to remember now. I don't totally remember, but I'm trying to remember if like Andor was a volume show or as much of a volume show as the other ones. Maybe, I guess it probably was, but
there were some like sets built, like huge sets built, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's probably true for all of the, but yeah, huge sets, as you say. And there were some set photo, or there's some photos too of them like out and about in England, I think. Doing some shooting and stuff.
A lot of location filming. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure that the volume is going to be used in some regard, but yeah, right. Curious to see what the show will look like and all that kind of stuff. So, but yeah, it looks like the still looks great. And also to me, it's just like almost surprising, but it makes sense in the timeline, you know, of how things are releasing. But like, I feel like we just finished Obi-Wan and now we're already like into the hype cycle for Andor, where we're getting like magazine articles and interviews and all this stuff. But like, it comes out August 31st. We're almost halfway through July. So you're talking 6-7 weeks and the show's going to be on, you know? Mm-hmm. So of course they're starting to promote it. So.
And going back, bringing this back to the conversation we had earlier, what I really love about this and what I kind of love about Star Wars's approach is that this is something completely separate from Obi-Wan, which we just watched. This isn't something where like, oh, you better make sure you watch Obi-Wan before you watch Andor. And like, oh, the post-credit sequence of Obi-Wan sets up a big reveal for Andor. Like, this is something totally different, not just in like timeline placement and characters it's focused on, but tonally as well. And I have to get this in because it's so like kind of connected to what we've been talking about is, you know, I think one of the things that's just giving me kind of the MCU fatigue after watching both like Doctor Strange and then more recently yesterday, Thor: Love and Thunder, is like you get these directors in who have like very distinct styles, very distinct visions. You know, they have their kind of tone with like Sam Raimi, Taika Waititi, and you get like these like bits where you're like, oh, that feels like, you know, that feels like a Sam Raimi moment, or that feels like a Taika Waititi moment. And then, but then there's like huge swaths of the film where you're like, well, anyone could have directed that because it's just the Marvel house style. Like, and it just, and it, this, it, you know, like, yeah, there's some like cool, there's some like really great, like Taika-isms in Thor: Love and Thunder, but like, it's not that far removed from, you know, Captain Marvel or Iron Man 3 or, you know, any of them, the movies. Like, whereas I feel like something like Obi-Wan and kind of what I feel like Andor is going to be, those are completely different kinds of stories. And I don't think like the Obi-Wan series, something I liked about it is it, like the structure of it was like pretty unique to that show. Like the feeling of it, like it didn't feel like Mandalorian season 2. Like it didn't hit the same beats like at all. It was kind of its own thing. And I think Andor is also going to be kind of its own thing. And it's going to a lot of the, you know, philosophies and styles and visions and creativities of the creators will be, have more of an imprint on the Star Wars productions holistically than I feel like we're getting in in the Marvel stuff. So I think there is, you know, there, that is kind of what's separating those things right now.
It's extremely rare that I find myself in the position where I feel like I'm like the Marvel, like I'm the defending the Marvel thing, because I'm just not a huge Marvel fan or whatever. And it's not that I, you know, I don't disagree with the point you just made there. But I think one thing to be fair to the MCU, or to try to play devil's advocate or whatever, they have TV shows as well. So maybe it's not, I don't know. But like, to me, I'm just thinking like, okay, well, yeah, like if Taika was going to make a TV show, I feel like he'd have more time and more freedom to make it tonally and stylistically whatever he wanted it to be. But I'm almost like listening to you talk about that and thinking like, okay, but I do want his Star Wars movie to feel like a Star Wars movie. I don't want it to just be like a Taika Waititi movie, like in the Star Wars universe. I want it to also, like, I want him to walk that line where I can feel his personality, but also it still feels like a Star Wars movie. I think to go to Sam Raimi is a great example, because to me, obviously this is before the MCU, so there was no house style, there was no whatever, but like the original Spider-Man movies, I think they're a super successful example of a director maintaining his tone and style, but also it's what you'd expect from a Spider-Man movie, you know, like I don't know. I think it's a great example of maintaining his own personality, but also making a Spider-Man movie. Granted, he was making kind of basically the first Spider-Man movies there ever were, so he sort of didn't have any, you know, but there's all these comics and all this other Spider-Man media, and it still felt like Spider-Man, but it also felt like Sam Raimi. And maybe he didn't do that with Doctor Strange. I don't know. I haven't seen it, but I feel like let's just say the original Spider-Man movie, to me, that's a good example of what I would hope for from like a Taika Waititi Star Wars movie, is that you get plenty of Taika feeling and tone and all that, but in a way that makes sense within the larger idea of what a Star Wars movie is, or a Spider-Man movie is, or whatever.
Yeah. And I mean, to that, I think you do bring up a good point in that the MCU shows do feel a little bit different than the movies and do have a bit more personality. I haven't watched some of the more recent ones, but I do think like WandaVision, for like the first like 90% of that show, I would say does feel pretty unique. And that is not something that, you know, feels exactly the same as like Guardians of the Galaxy or something.
Yeah. And just super quickly, like as somebody who's not super into the Marvel movies, like I liked WandaVision, but then the last maybe two episodes, they felt like any Marvel movie. Like all of a sudden I was just watching any Marvel movie, and it lost any of that unique personality and stuff. That being said, I don't know, a lot of people I talked to were like, yeah, I wasn't really into WandaVision until we got to the end, then it was awesome. So, I mean, certainly people want that. Yeah. So, you know, it is what it
they
is. But,
yeah. And maybe Caleb can weigh in more on this, because I know he's a big MCU fan. But I do think that even the Marvel shows still like require that like background knowledge, and it's still like it's still all homework, because you have to like watch this show and this movie to like understand whatever. And I guess that's probably the case with like Obi-Wan. I guess you probably have to have seen the prequels and the original trilogy. So I guess it is kind of that same.
Yeah, but
problem.
You don't have to have seen Mandalorian. You don't have to have seen the sequel trilogy. You don't have to have watched Book of Boba Fett. Like Dave's bringing up comics and stuff that like are, you know, tangentially connected, but you don't have to have, you know, I don't think it really, I think it expects that you know the first six Star Wars movies, and I think that's it.
Yeah.
Which is, I guess, kind of a lot, but not really. Like, everybody's seen them, you know, I don't know. Yeah. And you had about 40 years to watch them all, too, not like, you know, the last 2 or 3 years, so.
Yeah, that's true. But, like, my point, and, like, I think maybe, like, some of these MCU comparisons are like a bit clumsy in retrospect, but it is kind of like the meta conversation around all this, like just generally in our culture. But I think what I appreciate is going from Obi-Wan and to Andor is they are, I mean, they're set in the same time period, essentially, when you look at like the big picture, like they're, you know, they're years apart, but like not like a huge gulf in the time apart. And but like I think just the types of stories they're telling are totally different. The tone is going to be different in both the, like, you know, the purpose, the themes of both stories are going to be completely different. Like Andor's story, like, yeah, he's a good guy, Obi-Wan's a good guy. Their like purposes and their themes, like, yeah, there's like the big like, oh yeah, well, the Empire is bad part of it, but their personal motivations are so different in the shows that they're just going to be totally different feeling shows. And I don't think that it like hurts that they're going back to like the comments earlier about like, you know, yes, we need to get out of this same time period. Like we should tell stories outside of this time period for sure, because that would be interesting. But at the same time, like these are two stories told in the same time period. And, you know, I could be wrong. Like we could have Andor like rescuing like a little girl and stuff throughout the show. And it could be like, whoa, this is hitting the exact same plot beats of Obi-Wan. Wow. I wasn't expecting that. I could be wrong, but from what I see and from what I understand about the show, they're just going to be completely different things. And the fact that they're set in the same time period, like, doesn't really matter.
I know. That's what I'm saying, right? Genre fans are kind of weird. Like, I mean, I get like, I mean, this is, you talk about a clumsy comparison. It is a clumsy comparison because science fiction, space fantasy, genre stuff, you have the opportunity to get weird. You have the opportunity to go new places and explore new worlds and do all that kind of stuff. So I do get it. But at the other hand, on the other side of it, like, can you imagine like film critics or people discussing like, you know, noted MCU fan Martin Scorsese being like, can you believe another movie set in New York City? Like, oh my God, Scorsese, can we do something different? Like, why does it matter where it is? You know, like if Andor took place on Tatooine, but it was like this spy thriller that was a completely different show than Obi-Wan Kenobi, would I really be like, oh God, Tatooine again? Oh my God. Like, I mean, I'm sorry, but like, yes, like it's Star Wars. You can go a million places. It's kind of redundant and sort of stupid or ridiculous to keep doing shows on the same planets. But also like, I guess, I'm not the person who's coming to Star Wars to be like, ooh, it's a new show. What planet are we going to? Like, that's the thing I care about the most. Like, what planet are we going to be on? Like, oh, it's set 20 years after Return of the Jedi instead of 5 years after Return of the Jedi. It's going to be totally different. You know, like, I mean, setting it 20 years after Return of the Jedi would offer us opportunities to tell different types of stories. That's the part that's interesting. I don't actually care where it is in the timeline. I don't care what planet it's on. And so I think your example or your, you know, discussion of Andor saying like, this is going to be a really different show. It happens to be timeline wise in a pretty similar place, but the show is going to be different. It's going to have a different focus. It's going to make you feel different things. It's going to explore different ideas. Diego Luna is calling it a refugee story. I mean, it's going to be different, you know? And so like at the end of the day, like, does it really matter? It doesn't matter that much, like what planet it's on or what part of the timeline it's in. On 4th of July, I was arguing with our friend Jordan. He's like, I just want Star Wars to be in a different time frame. I'm sick of all these same places and characters. It's an okay point. Like, it's a fair valid point. Like, it's fair, but also it's like, why put that obstacle in front of you? Like, okay, I need all my Star Wars to be in a new place in a new time frame. And if it's not, I'm pissed off. Oh, new show about Obi-Wan Kenobi. I don't know. I might've liked it, but it's in the same damn planet I've already seen before in the same part of the timeline. Forget it. I'm like, you're closing your, like, I just feel like a lot of people, they like make these, they state these like, you know, deal breakers, you know? And it's like, that's like on my list of things I care about with a new Star Wars project. That's pretty far down. You know, what planet is it set on? Where is it in the timeline? A lot of other things we've been talking about. Who's writing it? Who's directing it? What kind of story does it want to tell? what is it focused on? Character? Is it focused on theme? Like, what are the characters and themes it's focused on? That stuff to me is so much more interesting or important than, you know, some of these, like, I'm a giant nerd myself, but like these nerdy things, like these lore based, like, you know, I don't know. That stuff is all fun. It enriches things, but when it becomes an obstacle to you actually enjoying it because you've decided ahead of time it has to be this or it has to be that, then I think you're precluding yourself from really enjoying something you might otherwise enjoy. That's my personal, you know, feeling about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, like, it's fine to be critical of Star Wars things. It's fine to not like a Star Wars thing. That's okay. You don't get kicked out of the fandom. You don't get ostracized. Like, you don't have to pretend to like everything. I think, you know, toxic positivity is just as bad as toxic negativity. And, like, but, like, really think about, like, what is it that you didn't like about this thing? Was it because they, like, went back to Tatooine? Or was it because, like, you just didn't like the story? Or, like, did you not like this character because they were new, because they were old? Or did you just not connect with their arc, or felt like, you know, they're, like, you didn't really understand them, or, like, or the plot beats, or, like, whatever, or just the presentation? Like, there's, I think, like, yeah, maybe just, like, if you don't like something, that's fine. But, like, you know, think about, like, why you didn't like it. And, like, maybe, again, maybe it was the director or the writer. Like, then go back, like, be like, oh, yeah, wait, I haven't liked any of the movies that that person's ever done. Like, that would probably explain why I didn't like their Star Wars thing. Like,
yeah. Yeah, no, because, like, we're going to wrap the show up here in just a second, I promise. Mm-hmm. But, like, I was cornered by two friends about Kenobi the weekend after it finished. And they cornered me and they were like, look, this show sucks, dude. And I'm like, no, I love the show. And they're like, you're crazy. It sucks so bad. And then they pointed to, remember when Darth Vader dragged Obi-Wan through the fire, and then, you know, whatever, the distraction happened, and then Obi-Wan was right there on the other side of the fire. He could have used the Force to stop him this way. They could have used the Force to stop him that way. Like, it didn't make any sense. It wasn't logical, blah, 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 you know? And I was like, okay, do you remember in A New Hope? I brought up the thing that people bring up all the time, right? Like, Uncle, or Obi-Wan Kenobi dies. And that's really painful for Luke. But on the other hand, Princess Leia's entire planet and everyone she's ever known in her life and a whole planet is destroyed. And then, like, she's consoling him, right? I'm like, you know, that is stupid. And you guys, if it came out now, if it was on Disney Plus, whatever, you would rip it apart. You'd be like, it's garbage, it's awful, it's terrible, it's whatever. And so the thing I said to them is, like, I'm not telling you that you need to like Obi-Wan Kenobi. What I'm saying is that I feel like you are now at a place in your life where you are not open to the kind of storytelling that, like, Star Wars is, like, because the Star Wars that you loved before, you would also rip apart now if it came, you know, like, you wouldn't be okay with it, you know? And it's a fantasy, it's heightened, it's, in a lot of ways, it's for kids. It doesn't really care that much. George Lucas never cared that much about making sure every little logical plot detail, like, made the most sense in the world. They're big stories. They're sweeping stories, right? They're taking big swings. It's not about these little, and these guys are, like, loving The Boys on Amazon Prime, which I haven't seen, but I know it's a very, like, adult, and it's silly too. I know it's silly, but it's, like, violent, and it's, like, totally, it's, like, aimed completely at, like, 40-year-old dudes, right? That's the kind of stuff that, like, that's what you guys want. You don't want the kind of thing that Star Wars has to offer anymore. If they were like, we don't like Star Wars, that's why we didn't like Obi-Wan Kenobi, I'm like, okay, fine, fair, shake hands, like, we can each go out our own ways. I happen to like Star Wars now. We don't have to go our own ways, like, not be friends anymore, but, like, we don't have to keep talking about Star Wars, because I feel like I keep having these arguments with people who fundamentally don't like what Star Wars is anymore, but want to, like, convince me that I should also stop liking it. And I'm like, no, you're just not in a place where you're into that anymore. Like, you're not open to it. You don't want it. You want it to be something completely different than it's ever been before, and you want it to, you know, be a completely different kind of thing. And it's like, you just don't, like, it's not for you anymore. Mm-hmm. That's fine.
Yeah.
But Like, if it's not for you anymore, like, can we just say, like, it's not for me anymore and move on, instead of like finding me and arguing with me for like an hour about why the thing I love sucks, because people want to do that to me all the time. And I don't do that to them. I do not do that to them.
Yeah, I know. Like, I have this friend who keeps like belaboring that I need to watch Stranger Things. And I'm like, bro, I watched the first two seasons. I did not like that. That was not for me. Here are the things I didn't like about it. And then for like the past, like, I don't know, 7 years, I've been told like, no, I need to watch this and I need to like this. And just like, imagine, had I watched that, and to this friend every day, I was like, hey, did you see this new episode? These are the things that I thought sucked in it. Like, how would that feel?
That would suck. And that would suck. And to be fair, at this point, I only do the bit where I tell you to watch Stranger Things. I never actually earnestly try to convince you to watch Stranger Things. I'm done trying to convince you to watch Stranger Things. I'm not done doing the bit. I am done earnestly trying to convince you. And in your defense, you don't do the thing where you hate watch Stranger Things just so that you can then tell me how much you hate it, which is essentially what people do with Star Wars.
Yeah, and I will continue
Ryan, if you this weekend, if you go out and watch Stranger Things, even a couple episodes, just so that you can start telling me why it's awful, then you'll be just like these friends of mine. But you don't do that, do you?
No.
Why would you subject yourself to something you hate?
I mean, yeah, honestly, like especially at our age, like, you know, we were kind of talking about this like the other day in a text about, of course, Stranger Things, where it's like, honestly, like, dude, we're like at best like halfway through our days in this mortal coil. Like, there is no scenario where I am going to consume anything that I am not interested in at this point. Like, and this is as being like a huge fan of like media. Like, I love, like, I unabashedly just love pop culture. I love media. I love, you know, films, movies, video games, comics, like books, like everything. Like, I love that stuff. That's a huge part of like who I am. I'm going to continue to consume the things I love forever. And like, but I also like recognize like, hey, I'm not, you know, a high schooler or college kid where I can just like watch, you know, 100 hours of TV of like a show I don't care about. Like, I could just do that when I was like then, or like play a 75-hour RPG that like I get done with. I was like, yeah, that kind of sucked. Anyway, like, start another one. Like, I can't do that anymore. I have to be selective with like the stuff I like. And I really deeply encourage people to do the same, and also to kind of recognize like, there's this huge push in our culture that like we have to cling to our nostalgia. Like, if we lose that, we lose who we were as like children, we lose our innocence, everything. Like, if we don't still love the new He-Man show, then like, wow, our hearts have just died, and like all of this stuff. And there's a lot of money to be made off that, and I think some of it is like sincere, and I think some of it is like incredibly cynical at the same time. And like, just the other day, like, I was like, you know, something I said was like, wow, if I can watch a Marvel movie by like one of my favorite directors, maybe my favorite active director right now, like, I don't know, it's probably like Taika and Rian Johnson, like, as far as like current, like modern directors go. If I can watch a Marvel movie by one of my favorite directors and not really get much out of it because I'm like so burnt out on the formula, then it's like, okay, maybe it's time for me to like step away from this. Like, yeah, I've been reading Marvel comics all my life. You know, I was there day one for the MCU, but like, if I'm not enjoying this, like, do I need to like watch every Marvel movie if I know it's just going to end with me like just like putting a like 2-star review on my letterbox and like typing out like 2 paragraphs about what I don't like about it? Like, is that really fulfilling for me? Or should I be like leaning into something like I care more about? And yeah, so I mean, that's like, it's totally fine to like stop liking Star Wars. It's okay. And it's okay to like only some parts of Star Wars. That's fine. But like, I don't know, like, respect your time, respect like your your life enough to, like, if you don't like something, just don't do it and live and let live with other people.
Yeah, I just want people to resist the thrill of hate watching it just to tell me, just to corner me and tell me how much it sucks. That's it. Like, there's so many things that I don't care about at all. Like, either I watched one episode or I'm not even going to bother watching it because mm-hmm. I just don't think I'm going to like it. And I just don't weigh in on that stuff. Like, I just don't, I don't know. I can't tell you
sometimes
the last time.
Sometimes you do. We all do this. I do it too. Like, things that we're dismissive of that, you know, we don't actually have much experience of. I think, like, that's a human thing, especially in, like, the nerdy, like, pop culture world. But
dismissive,
I think,
dismissive of,
yeah,
dismissive of, yes. Like, if my friends are like, oh, I'm not gonna watch that Obi-Wan show, that Star Wars sucks, I'd be like, all right, cool. Like, you're not a Star Wars person. Like, we don't have mm-hmm. to talk about this, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, like when I think you and Rich were talking about Xenoblade Chronicles 3 for, like, you know, 2 days straight in our text thread. Mm-hmm. Like, and, mm-hmm. you know, I was like, I don't care about that. I'm not going to play that. I didn't even bother saying that. I just, like, don't say anything. You know what I mean? Or, you know, I might make a comment, like one comment or something, where I'm like, yeah, cool. Yeah, like, I'm not going to play.
Yeah.
But there's
a
world
a side comment in there.
Like a snack, but in my humble opinion, there's a world of difference between that and passionately arguing to you why Xenoblade Chronicles 3 sucks for like 45 mm-hmm. minutes straight. Mm-hmm. That's what people do with Star Wars. And I think it's because they, let's end this show, but oh my God. But anyway, like, my friends that I'm talking about specifically, I think it's because at one point they had an emotional and powerful connection to Star Wars. And I think they're upset that they don't have that anymore. So they want it. But I'm like, on the outside, you know, to a certain extent on the outside, as far as their personal relationship with Star Wars goes, on the outside looking in, being like, there's no hope for this. It's gone. It's over. Like, just move on. You know what I mean? And so
it's like when Obi-Wan tells Luke, like, nope, you got to kill Vader. There's Anakin's gone. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think this episode is gone too. I think it is.
We got to kill this episode. There's no redemption arc for this episode. Yeah.
What does Kylo Ren say? Let the episode go. Kill it if you have to. Is that what it is? Something like mm-hmm. that.
Yeah. Let the episode die.
Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. yes, yes. All right, so we will let the episode die there. Thank you very much for listening. Tell us what you think about hating Star Wars or not hating it. Tatooine, do you love it? Do you hate it? Andor, Taika Waititi, whatever it may be, we'd love to hear from you. Stranger Things. You're always welcome to send in your thoughts and feelings about Stranger Things. We would love that as well. But you could do that. You could do that by emailing the show.
you can do that. That is something you can do.
And if you wanted to do it, you could email the show, blockaderunnerpodcast@gmail.com, or you could follow the show on Twitter @blockaderun. Follow Ryan on Twitter at
Vyamalay, Vyamalay.
All of our posts and previous episodes are up at blockaderunnerpodcast.com. And until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon with another episode of the Blockade Runner Podcast.
We are all the Republic.